Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back again to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
Hey, Jen, what are we going to do this weekend? Or this week? Weekend? We are going to do something Christmassy.
Christmas time! I'm going to start my Christmas shopping. That's not unusual for me.
That's already pretty much done in our house, but
yeah,
we like to get it done early. But you know what? We're going to do something as Christmassy as the X-Files gets, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. This is Christmas X-File style, and I like it.
This week, we're going to be talking about the classic How the Ghosts Stole Christmas.
Woo!
Which I just watched again last night in preparation for this, and it was really funny. My husband watched it with me, and at the end, I was like, what do you think of that? He says, that was a really weird episode.
Good. Yeah, that we like weird around here.
Yeah, and it is funny because it's another one of those, like, I wanted to say similarly, well, you know what? We got to do something first, right? Before we get into the actual How the Ghost Stole Christmas episode, yeah. We got to read some tweets of the week. So are you ready, Jen? Let's do some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay, tweets from this week. This is in response to our episode, mostly, about the funniest moments on The X-Files. And we had lots of great responses to that. Hopefully people enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it, and as much as I enjoyed listening to it, quite frankly. The first tweet is from Enrique, and also known as EA Flows. Love that Twitter handle. Enrique says, love getting notifications when a new episode drops. I'm a DJ at a club. Cool. And I enjoy listening to you ladies rekindle that X-Files nostalgia as I unwind when I get home from work. You guys rock. Salutations from South Florida. Thanks, Enrique. That's lovely. I feel kind of like a bit cooler just because Enrique listens to us. And
I like
a super cool guy.
I like knowing that any dudes are listening to us. So like, yeah. Hey, dudes, tweet at us. We want to hear from you too, dudes.
That's right. Shout out to the dudes.
Yeah.
We love you guys. Dudes can be shippers too. Most definitely. Mm-hmm. I know a dude. I'm married to a dude who is a major shipper in his fandom and writes fanfic and everything. So I know for a fact it is a thing. So we love you, dudes.
Love it.
From Karen. Karen said, so many great moments. And I love that you didn't just stick to the comedic episodes and went with a bunch of stuff that we don't always talk about, but all agree is hilarious. I always thought that the small potatoes clip in Forehead Sweat was Darren Morgan's ultimate act of self-deprecation, having one of his characters literally killing the writer of the episode. Just really funny on this super meta level. I love that. It's a really great point, Karen, because, of course, Darren Morgan happened to play Eddie Van Blunt in Small Potatoes. And so, yeah, when we have that scene sort of recreated in Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, Reggie is, in fact, shooting Darren Morgan. So, yeah, that's a really great point. I hadn't thought about it that way before.
Me neither. And I think that was funny, too, because I remember we were talking about the fact that we thought it might have been funnier if he had shot him while he was still Mulder.
Yeah.
Which I do think would have been funny, but this is like, it brings it to kind of an entirely new sort of meta level, which I enjoy. So
that's very cool, actually. Yeah, I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
From Terry Lynn Moreland, my funniest moment is in the humbug episode when Mulder and Scully exhume a potato in the sheriff's yard, and he asks Mulder what he's doing, and he says, we're exhuming your potato. Yeah. I always laugh so hard in that scene. Overall, Annie and Jen, your picks were awesome. Loved it. Thanks, Terry Lynn. We're Exhuming Your Potato came very, very close to my top 10. It was like in my top 15, one of the ones that I tragically had to not use. And so I'm really glad that Terry Lynn mentioned it.
Nice.
There's a lot of great stuff from
Humbug. All the Darren Morgans. Like you said, you had to cut some Darren Morgan stuff. So
yeah. Otherwise, we would have just been here all day. And we have done a Darren Morgan podcast episode, too, that folks should definitely listen to, where we talk about Darren in great detail.
Yes.
From Kathy G, this was so much fun. I giggled with you at the Cassandra line. the Cassandra line being, which he sees Agent Mulder, something like,
I'm going to pee the floor.
Yeah. And Kathy says, I can't wait for the update next time Annie meets David Duchovny, when Annie claims indeed she will say that to him.
I will.
Yeah, but now we're just getting that on the record one more time. my favorite line, and this is Kathy again, my favorite line of the entire series is the one from X-Cop, and this is Mulder. She just said, fuck. Like when he says, we can't be on TV, she just said, fuck. Love that. I really love that, too. That was actually also one of the moments that came really close to my top 10.
I have to say this, because, I mean, I brought it up because it was, I knocked it off because I picked Steven Eady from X-Cops. But when when I read this tweet from Kathy, I had this memory stirred. Do you remember? We're going to be talking about in one of our episodes coming up, we're going to be talking about, like, the old styles of fandom and our dial-up and all of our old internet stuff. Do you remember when you had an old computer back in the day of X-Files, when you could set it up so that you would turn your computer off and it would, like, make a noise or a clip or a quote? Like, I used to set up my computer and you could make it, like, so that when you shut your computer off, it would say something.
Right. And, oh, yeah. Okay.
Sorry, that was my long-winded way of saying that. That clip, the one where Mulder goes, I don't think it's live television, Scully. She just said, beep. That used to be the sound, my shutoff sound of my computer. Yes. And
That's awesome.
That memory kind of left my brain until we were talking about this. And I was like, oh, my God, I love that line so much that it was one of the few X-Files quotes at the time, because I was a very new watcher, that made it into my desktop.
Well, it's worth it. I mean, all these years later, it's still a golden quote.
It's so,
I'm totally on board with that.
So funny.
And Kathy also says two other favorites of mine that didn't make your list: Sheriff Hartwell saying, "Y'all must be the government people."
Yes.
I'm sure Annie could do that way better than I can. In Bad Blood, and Mulder humming I Dream of Jeannie theme in Je Souhaite. Yeah, Je Souhaite was another one that I wanted to find a couple of moments from that to fit into my top 10 and couldn't. So
yeah,
glad that Kat mentioned that. And yeah, Bad Blood, tons of good stuff in Bad Blood. Mm-hmm. Call Me Scully says, I was driving around the home counties. By the way, BTW, side note, British terminology lesson for all of us who don't know it. The home counties refers to the counties around London.
Oh.
Just a little something for everyone.
Thank you.
I was driving around the home counties listening to this and getting giddy because, let me tell you, I love serious X-Files, but I adore comedy episodes. I don't know of any other shows that can switch genre so seamlessly and effectively. Yeah, right. It was always such a treat. And then after the episode, I'd get on the phone with my fellow files and quote all the best bits. And we'd be saying them at school the next day. Such fond memories of Syzygy for this in particular. One of my favorite bits, which maybe I shouldn't find hilarious, is in Tithonus when Scully is with Felig in the car and she runs across the road to try to prevent the death. And when she cuffs that guy, she just gives him a slap across the cheek like,
yes.
Shut up, you idiot. Boss. Oh, yes. Call Me Scully. We love that moment, too.
I remember. I tweeted that out, or I retweeted her, because I was like, I forgot. I completely forgot about the pimp slap.
Yeah.
That would have definitely made my list. I know it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to, like, knock things off your list when you're, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking. But yes, the pimp slap's amazing. I would die to know if Jillian improvised that or if that was scripted.
Yeah. It feels a bit improvised, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of like, just shut up. Like, we're done with you. And it's one of my favorite Scully moments ever. I also wanted to bring this up to another moment, since we're talking about it, that I really, really wanted to include, that I completely forgot, like how we completely forgot where the hell they taking Reggie, which would definitely made my list.
That where the hell they taking Reggie kind of flitted through my head at one point when I was thinking about my list, and for some reason flitted right back out again. So,
well, because talking about the montage, so you probably chose. But the one I was going to say, because, you know, last week we decided that we forgot that. But this week I realized that another one of my most hilarious moments that was actually in season 11, too, was the moment in Nothing Lasts Forever when Mulder notices Scully's haircut.
Oh, yeah, that is actually really great.
It's so good. Just the beat. And again, we were talking about how in comedy, in a comedy show, how they really have to be careful with those beats. And that was just a moment where they took their time and it was so worth it when he's like, did you get your hair cut? And she just stares at him for a good full 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And goes like, are you kidding me? Like,
and that scene ends there, I think.
Yeah, or at least it cut to something else. But I remember thinking, too, when they swapped the order of the episodes, because Nothing Lasts Forever was originally episode eight, and they moved it to 9, and we're all thankful for that. But
yes,
it makes it even funnier because he went an entirely more episode without noticing.
Like, exactly. That makes it even better.
Yeah. I mean, originally it's like, okay, RM9, they're not talking. There's no dialogue. So it makes sense that he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
But then there's an entire new episode between them, and that just makes the whole thing so much funnier. Anyway,
that whole thing about, you know, they're not bifocals, they're progressives, that whole scene, I think because I was kind of running through the seasons a little bit in my head, and I was thinking about humorous moments, and I completely blanked out that there's a really funny bit in Nothing Lasts Forever, because it's such a doesn't feel like a funny episode when you think about it. I love the episode, but for some reason I blanked on that scene because it just seems to be kind of this weird non sequitur, but that's what's so funny about it.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we're going to have to do, you know, in several months, another one of these, because whenever I do my rewatch, I'm going to start keeping track of the little moments that make me laugh that I've just completely forgotten about, because that was definitely one of them.
Yeah, this is it. And sometimes the things that make you laugh aren't necessarily the things that you think about when you think about humor on the X-Files.
Yeah.
Because when you think about humor on the X-Files, you think Darren Morgan, there's certain episodes that stand out. But then there's all these odd little sort of moments that are not necessarily super well known, but are still, they just make you laugh.
It just hits you. Like you said, humor is so subjective. It just hits you in that little, in that place where it just tickles you so. And I mean, every time I think about these things, it makes me laugh. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are all, they're all great. I mean, there's many, and Call Me Scully really nailed it when she said that how X-Files just seamlessly just goes from genre to genre that way. And I mean, Nothing Lasts Forever being a perfect example, where that's a very, very generally very serious, quite gory episode. But then it's got this humor in there and it all works. It all flows together in a magical way. So The X-Files does that, I think, in a way that no other show can.
I agree completely.
I love that. So that's it for tweets for this week. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about those before we move on, Annie?
No, I just wanted to bring up those little moments that I forgot to talk about, but I'm glad that, I'm sure that we're going to come up with more, and you guys keep sending us in your funny moments, because getting reminded of those, the ones that I forgot, really brightened my day, so.
It's great, eh? I mean, any little moments of humor is great to share, and so we appreciate that, so thanks for tweeting us, because it certainly reminded me of a lot of funny moments for me as well, so. Thanks as always for tweeting us. Tweet at us anytime on any subject relating to the X-Files at XFD Podcast. We love hearing from you guys, so thank you very much.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
So, How the Ghost Stole Christmas. This is season 6, episode 6, written and directed by the one and only Chris Carter.
I know him.
Yeah.
Well, not personally, but I know.
What I wanted to say before we went into the tweets was that I felt like this, because I was talking about my husband's reaction to this episode, and it felt to me kind of like a Bad Blood type episode, in that you can probably appreciate it more if you're a fan and you kind of understand the dynamic, the Mulder-Scully dynamic.
Okay.
Do you kind of agree with that? Because, I mean, he gets it. He gets it. But I think it doesn't quite sink in the way it would sink in with us, because we know what is to come and what has come before and all of the little minuscule details about their relationship. And
That's a very interesting point. I mean, I think the episode plays on a couple of different levels. On sort of a very surface level, it can just be like this cool haunted house episode. In fact, I love talking about my tattoo, so I'll just throw in a brief tattoo story. When I was getting my tattoo of my dog's paw approximately 1 month ago, see the picture of it on my Twitter. My tattoo artist was a big X-Files fan, not like quite on our level of X-Files fandom. He didn't like interact with the fandom, but he loved watching the show. But you know, it had been a long time since he'd watched many episodes. And one of the few episodes he could remember off the top of his head was this haunted house episode. But he described it as it was that Halloween episode with Ed Asner in it. So he remembered it as a Halloween episode, but he remembered Ed Asner. So I think that Ed Asner and Lily Tomlin kind of make it a little bit more sort of give it a broader appeal to folks that aren't like the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
So there is a lot about characterization in this There's a lot of psychoanalysis, which I find really super interesting and fascinating about Mulder and Scully as individuals, as well as their relationship. And if you're not like a hardcore fan, that may not really grab you. But I think there's probably enough sort of spooky, scary, funny stuff going on that would probably keep you going anyway. Although some people and their husbands might walk away and say, that was just weird.
No, I mean, I don't. It's not that he didn't like it. I think he was just kind of like, wasn't really quite sure what to make of it. Like,
what the hell was that?
Yeah, because it is. I mean, we'll get to this when we get to the actual mechanics of what's going on. By the end of it, it was just like, what? Like, he really thought that he shot Scully, and then he was like,
yeah.
And which, I mean, I feel like the first time I watched this, first few times I watched this, it took me a while to sort of figure out exactly what was going on. And who knows? I still don't know entirely sure. I'm not quite entirely sure.
It is kind of a complicated plot and a complicated ending. When we were putting together our sort of ideas of what we wanted to talk about tonight, I added, what exactly is going on there about the whole scene with the shootings and what follows? Because, yeah, I mean, this is, I've watched this episode many times. It's one of my favorites. But I still kind of get a little confused about exactly who knows what and who's doing what at each moment. So
we can break it down.
Yeah, we'll break it down. If you're not paying close attention, then you would definitely be confused, I think, as a viewer. So it is a little confusing, but I think that, yeah, once you kind of catch on, you can get the general gist of it for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting. It's an interesting way that it played out. Is it possible that Chris Carter could have clarified it? I don't know. He could have, I suppose. But then you run into a possibility of it just being kind of dumbed down and a bit too obvious. So
right.
Like the X-Files is, it's a little subtle.
I think that's par for the course for this show. It's so funny. Whenever I think about Chris Carter and the X-Files, I always think of, you've seen Mary Poppins, right? The movie.
I have not seen Mary Poppins.
Are you serious? I am outing you. I thought that was going to be an easy yes. Okay, well, there's a point.
I mean, I know it very well just from because I'm alive in Western society.
Okay, well, there's a part in the movie where she says, there's something you need to know about me. I don't explain anything. And every time I see that movie and I hear that line, it makes me think of Chris Carter because it's very much, very much the case. Like it's like the tagline in Ghoulie when it's like, you see what I want you to see. And it's true. It's his show. Yeah. You know what I mean? He gets to explain it just as much as he wants to.
Yeah, as much or as little. He demands a lot of the audience. He really does. To really get everything, he demands a lot. And that's why we're at like, you know, year 26 and still talking about the show, because there's a lot to it and a lot of levels to it. And that's why I love the show.
Same. Totally agreed. I mean, it would not be as fun to discuss if there weren't these things to try and figure out for years and years and years. So,
yeah, I'll keep figuring stuff out.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Do you want to get into the plot of the actual Mulder Scully story, or did you want to talk about Lily Tomlin and Ed Asner first?
Let's talk. Maybe we'll talk about Lily and Ed first.
Okay.
Because once we get into the plot, that'll take us in all kinds of really cool directions.
Right.
Lily Tomlin and Ed Asner, they were, you know, very big names. Even today, you know, would be considered big names. And certainly back then, very big names. And not just big names, but played the parts so well. I love them. I love them in anything they've done outside of the X-Files as well. I just think they're both great actors. I think they definitely go a long way to making this episode, because the whole episode is just Mulder and Scully and Maurice and Lyda. So you need to have strong actors to kind of hold up that side of the story.
Yeah.
And I think they're both amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, too, that the idea that it's only the four of them this entire episode helps with a little bit with keeping it as simple as possible, because you have a lot of complex stuff going on, obviously, in this episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like adding anything else, like even more scenes that don't take place in the house, the ones that start and end the episode are just scenes with Mulder and Scully talking. It's all just talking. Like, it's not necessarily like a ton of action. There's not a lot of exposition or anything. It's just it's just characters talking in rooms. And I mean, I feel like a lot of the time they don't really have a chance to do that on this show very often.
That's right.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, so I really appreciate that particularly. Yeah. And they, like you said, they grabbed the really two great actors that they knew could carry it when they had to.
Yep.
Lily Tomlin and Ed playing Lyta and Maurice. And they're great. Awesome.
Can I just pick up on the point you just made about sort of how it's a relatively contained episode, which is part of what I love about it, I think. I mean, I love plays and I love talky kind of stuff. So this is just right up my alley. And I think the episode, aside from the very final scene, I think it kind of unfolds in real time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It feels like it does, at least.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering... you know this terminology better than I do. Would this sort of qualify as what is in the TV world called a bottle episode, which is probably defined as like an episode contained to kind of one set and one storyline? It's sort of a play-like kind of contained episode. Would you say that this falls into that category?
I mean, I actually don't know that term because I don't work in live action, but sounds right to me.
Look at that. I came up with something.
Yeah,
I feel smart.
It does feel like it could be like a play. And it, like you said, it all runs in real time. I mean, it does feel like, okay, it's almost like, okay, Scully's going to go off so Julian can take a break for 10 minutes while Mulder does his bit, and then Mulder gets to go off and David gets to take a break for 10 minutes while Scully comes. It's like they could perform this episode live. They really could.
I could just kind of picture like they'd have like a cool like rotating stage or something where they go from room to room. And I think that would be super cool. We should definitely mount a stage production of this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, we could be the producers. And I think we could also star in it.
Look at this. We could also get Larry, since he's really great.
Larry's going to play all four roles.
He could do all the roles. Look, we got it. It's done.
Yeah, done. But because I think it is one of the things I really like about the episode is I love character driven stories. I love dialogue. I love acting. And that's what this episode really relies on. Although, you know, there's not much in the way of sets, but the sets they have are super cool.
Yeah.
And really well used and utilized. I mean, the cool sort of walking from one room to another, it's an identical room, or is it? That's really well photographed and spooky and cool. And even though it more or less happens all in the same room, it doesn't feel like it's all in the same room, and they do really cool things with what they are given.
Right.
So I think it's really well done. This probably saved them a lot of money on the budget compared to an average episode, I suspect, which I think is the general idea of a bottle episode. It's like if you've run out of money or need to save money on the budget, you have a bottle episode because you don't have to spend a lot of money since it's all in one place.
Do you know if this is a set? Or if it's like an actual house?
I don't know. I was curious, actually. It looks like a house to me, but I don't know.
I wonder if there are
pretty amazing sets out there, so it could well be a set.
Yeah, I wonder if part of it was set and part of it was maybe shot inside a real house or, you know.
Yeah.
It's possible.
I think it could be. I mean, it could be like, you know, who knows, maybe there's like a couple of standard haunted housey type sets that folks in Hollywood use, and this was one of them. I don't know, but it looks great.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. I mean, the chandelier with the cobwebs on it and everything, it's beautifully shot. It's a very cool setting. So I really like what they did with it. Very creatively done. I mean, it could have been a bit of a boring episode, quite frankly, especially kind of the way we're describing it with, you know, not a lot of variation in sets and not a lot of action, but it's done so well in terms of the writing and the acting and the directing.
And it's paced very well.
It is paced really well.
Yeah.
It's got, it's entertaining from start to finish. I think it's just a very, very well done episode. I think it's in my top 25. I think it's like number 15 on my top 25 of all time X-Files episodes because of all those things.
Yeah, it was in mine too. I think mine was a little closer to the bottom of the list, but I mean, still that's it's a great one. You notice we were talking about how it feels like just a lot of people in rooms talking. And I think that it's funny to me because just a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, we were talking about I Want to Believe and how rare it is for us to see them talk with any sort of depth or, you know, length about their relationship.
Yeah.
Even though their relationship is at a very different place in this episode, that's what makes it great and interesting, because we still don't really know what's going on. And it's funny because they kind of poke fun at that throughout the episode, because like Maurice and Lyta don't really know what's going on. Particularly Lyta doesn't really know what's going on either. And she kind of is us. She's kind of us in this episode, because she's like, but like, you're both so attractive. Like,
what's up with that?
Yeah. And it's just, it was very funny. And I, again, every time I think of sort of the fun that gets poked at Mulder and Scully and their platonicness, it just makes me laugh that Chris Carter wrote this, because it's like, he knows what people are thinking. And, you know, it just to poke fun at it, I think, is really great. And to do that through those characters was such a brilliant idea.
Yeah. I always love the idea of seeing Mulder and Scully sort of from a different perspective, from the perspective of another character. It's, I think I tweeted once something like, I love to play the game, what do other people in this scene think Mulder and Scully's relationship is?
Yeah.
And this episode is all about that, which so I really love that aspect of it too.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this then, the actual, what's going on here? This episode,
what's going on here?
Yeah, this episode plays very heavily into themes of, you know, suggestibility and fear, and I think that like that's kind of the idea behind what Maurice and Lyta are trying to get these people to, I guess, succumb to every year. And it's interesting to me. What do you take in terms of how they know what they know? Like, I know this all kind of comes down to, how exactly is this episode working? Like, do they just know because they're ghosts and they know?
Do they have like special mystical powers?
Right. Or is it really just like they say that it's all in their head and they're projecting this upon themselves? Which, I mean, I think is almost more interesting, even though that isn't the likely answer, because this is the X-Files and kind of we know that there's ghosts. But like just in terms of all the stuff they tell them.
Yeah.
It's just, I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great point and a great question. I was wondering that myself, actually. I hadn't really thought about it until today, because I mean, they're throwing a lot of sort of psychobabble kind of stuff at both Mulder and Scully, but the stuff they come up with is kind of like quite close to the mark. Not necessarily in terms of objective truth, perhaps that's debatable, but it's certainly in terms of things that will affect them, in terms of what do they think of themselves and what will sort of pick away at their insecurities
and their fears. Thing. Yeah, like
and
you said,
fears.
Not objective truth, but perhaps when you hit so close to the mark, it makes you uncomfortable. I mean, especially in that scene with Mulder and Maurice, you can see in his face that he doesn't believe him at first. He's like, "Who's this guy? He's crazy." And then as the scene kind of goes on, he's getting increasingly uncomfortable. You can tell, and just by his body language, that he's pegged him. You know?
Yeah. Mulder feels as though he's been pegged, at least.
Right.
Whether he has really for sure, but it certainly makes Mulder feel like he's been pegged.
Or that it's possible.
That this it's all the worst aspects of him, of course. It's like the worst version of Mulder and his biggest sort of like insecurities and fear about how he is perceived and the kind of person he is.
Yeah.
But sort of going back to your original question, where do they get that from? I kind of like the theory that because they've been doing these hauntings for so long, they've just gotten really good at reading people.
Yeah.
I mean, this is almost like a little too good. I mean, supernaturally good. Maybe there's got to be some element of the supernatural. But I kind of like the idea that they're just like, they are just students of human nature, because this is what they've been doing for, you know, the last several decades or century, however long they've been dead for. And so they just sort of learned what makes people tick, because that's all they do all day long is trying to figure out how to drive people crazy and to make them do things that they normally never would do. And so they've just taken it upon them as a hobby to sort of learn how people tick. And I think that's kind of cool that they've just kind of assessed Mulder and Scully and just nailed them effectively.
Right. I like that. I really like that theory. And that's probably the truth mostly, but I'm also wondering too if this is kind of like a I want to say like almost like a Zodiac situation or like a psychic thing where you just guess and you're right most of the time because you're just you're saying very vague things in a way, and it's not it's not like he's saying vague things. I mean, the things that he's saying are very specific, especially when it comes down to when he's like, well, and you probably believe in aliens, like it's stuff like that that like it's very actually specific, but it's like it's like he knows it without even talking to him. Like he hasn't even they have, and it's true, maybe they've been observing them, because we don't actually run into Lyta and Maurice until like 20 minutes into the episode interacting with them, so it's possible they've been observing them. And from like the first 10 minutes, I mean, you learn all you need to know about Scully in like the first 3 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
Really. I guess you could look at it that way, that they've kind of been observing. Okay, all right, we watched them for 20 minutes, we know all we need to know, sit down, go. Let's throw all this shit at the wall and see what sticks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And they're just very good at reading what's hitting home and what isn't, so,
right?
Yeah,
like any therapist would, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. They'd make really excellent therapists, I think, because they seem really good at picking up on people's feelings and concerns, but they'd probably really screw you up if you went to them for therapy.
Right. And, you know, take out the murder, and then, you know, also what do you call bedside manner when it's a therapy?
Yeah.
It's not.
Could it be couchside manner?
Couchside manner.
Couchside manner. That sounds creepy.
Because Lyta's okay, but like Maurice is a total dick to Mulder. You could tell he's like, okay, I think we're done here. Like,
I kind of feel like Mulder would do well with a therapist like that, though. I think he needs a dick in his life.
Yeah.
Who's going to really like lay it on the line to him, because then it's like, you know, subtlety won't get through to Mulder because he's so sure about himself.
Right.
I think that he could have benefited from Reese. I mean, honestly, I feel like at the end of the episode, by the time we get to the end of the episode, we'll talk in much more detail about all of this. I felt like Mulder and Scully gained a bit of self-awareness by the end. And I made a note to myself, if this is what they get after encountering Maurice and Lyta for just, you know, an hour or two, imagine what sort of strides they could make in their relationship if they went to real counseling, because they're clearly, you know, quite adept at sort of taking on board criticism and insight about themselves and each other. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they're just like thirsting for that, because they react quite well to it by the end and really kind of try to take it on board. These two are like, they are so ready for counseling. Imagine what could have happened if we could have just got them in front of a proper counselor at that point. They were ready.
Yeah, I think you're completely absolutely right. And that's a very good point that I didn't really think about, but you're right, like especially at the end, they both have moments where they're like, huh, like it is definitely a moment of self-awareness. I wanted to bring out too, since we're talking about like therapy and everything, did you think it was kind of interesting and funny that Maurice hit so close to the mark with Mulder talking about all of his issues that send him into, what does he say, fertile fields for the descent into total wacko breakdown, which is what happens?
Yeah,
right.
Maurice has it nailed on the head, and not only is he accurate, he's very prophetic at the same time.
Yes, I mean
he nails it. I mean, the paramasturbatory, I'm not too sure even what that word means, but aside from that, I mean, all the terms that he's using are not far off the mark. You know, he's talking about obsessive compulsiveness, workaholism, antisocialism. I mean, he's describing Mulder in I Want to Believe to a T, quite frankly.
Yep, yep.
So, I mean, obviously Chris Carter has a good handle on Mulder as a character, and he can see these qualities in Mulder, obviously, at this stage. And most of the time at this point in the series, we all just kind of say, yeah, he's like that, but he's got lots of good qualities too, and it's fine.
Right.
But by the time we get to I Want to Believe in season 10, those problems become harder and harder to ignore. But they were there all along, for sure. And obviously it makes Mulder very uncomfortable.
It does. And I think it's also has to do with like how the circumstances happen to be, like where he is in his life, what situation is, like, he, you know, after the truth and between the truth and I Want to Believe, there's a lot of nothing for him.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, what is the phrase about idleness is the devil's plaything? I don't know. What's the, you know what phrase I'm thinking of, right?
Idle hands
are the devil's, something like that.
That's my husband when I need him. He would know that one.
Something about idle hands. Anyway, I should have looked it up. But it was one of the. It's one of those things where it's like he can't deal. Like he needs a therapist. Like he needs somebody to tell him, like, what do you do with all of this energy when you don't have anything to focus it on? And I mean, so it's just another thing. That again, I am not saying that Chris Carter was like, oh, down the road we're gonna have Mulder have a mental breakdown, you know. But it's here, like we've always said all along, all of the signs are there, and even Mulder knows it. It's like it's just very interesting to see that here in the middle of a somewhat lighthearted season 6 episode, you know.
Yeah, no, it is a really interesting combination this episode, because it is, you know, there's a lot of really great humor in it, but then there's, you know, this really kind of like sticking the knife in terms of the psychoanalysis, as well as, you know, genuinely scary stuff as well, and suspenseful stuff,
right?
So it's a really interesting combination, but really, really, it works well. It's one of these things that it sounds like it would be hard to pull off, but it works really well. And these insights are all like great fodder, because like you said earlier, you know, we don't get a chance to just talk about Mulder and Scully's character like this.
Right.
Especially in terms of like an observer, a very astute observer who's kind of, you know, calling a spade in terms of Mulder. And even in terms of Scully, you know, Lida, doesn't have quite as much to say to Scully as Maurice does to Mulder. But, you know, this idea of intimacy through codependency and that sort of thing, it's like, okay, that's kind of like, that sounds pretty accurate. And again, it's the kind of thing that plays out over the course of their relationship. We see a lot of that.
Do you want to, you want to maybe think of too, and this was also funny because this is another season 6 episode, her reaction to that, again, someone pegging her is initial, it's very Scully. It's disbelief. She's like, what? Like, but you know, by the end of the episode, by the end of the episode, she's thinking about it. And it reminded me of the moment in Ranking when Sheila tells her, well, you're just trying to divert me to Holman because you have feelings for Mulder. And she goes, what? And it's like the same reaction, even though we know the truth, that she's still in this place where she's trying to deny it. You know what I mean? And even though we all know that it's true. So it's just, it's very funny. And it's a very Scully reaction, like to have this this really abrupt disbelief. And I just wanted to point that out, like their reactions are different, and Mulder's more of like, what else do you have to say, really? You know, it's just
Mulder's like somewhere between, like, you know, interested and then awkward and then a little bit mad because this is just getting too much,
right?
But at no point do I feel as though he's rejecting this sort of assessment that he's getting,
right? And whereas, it's an evolution with him, whereas with Scully it's just like, how do I get out of here?
But it does kind of sink in on a certain level, because you know, she remembers some of it by the end. So obviously it's the kind of thing, I mean, I've certainly done that many a time in my life where I'm like, no. And then I think about it later and I'm like, wait a second, I kind of maybe dismissed that a little too quickly. Mm-hmm. So it was, classic Scully kind of reaction, but very much in character for both of them for how they reacted to the ghost psychoanalysis.
The truth has a funny way of coming to light.
That it does.
On the show and in life.
Definitely.
But that's a really good point that, we tend to sort of reject the things that we don't want to believe. And then they'll seep their way into our subconscious. Yeah. And I think
they just linger.
Yeah, that's definitely what happened to both of them. And I think, too, there's that shot at the end and where Mulder's kind of on the couch. And you can tell he's thinking really hard. Like, you can tell he's very thoughtful. And we don't really get to see a moment like that with Scully. But we know that he's in his head deep in that moment, like wondering, well, first of all, probably wondering, was any of that real? And second of all, going, what about all that stuff that they said? Like, you know,
yeah, it's definitely, you can just see him thinking. So we get a chance to see him thinking. But then, of course, when Scully shows up at his door, we know she must have been thinking too.
Yeah.
To have been sufficiently motivated to show up at his door at what must be an ungodly hour at that point.
Yeah. So, it really must be. Obviously,
this has affected both of them to the point that they're sufficiently uncomfortable that they want to sort of talk about it as soon as possible.
Exactly.
Which is nice.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's the intimacy through codependency. Who's the one who goes to whose apartment? That's important, right?
Yeah. Everything's important.
Let's talk about loneliness, which is another big theme. And we've talked about this before in our sort of season 6 discussions. I feel like loneliness is a huge theme of the show, but I feel like they touch on it so much during season 6 because mm-hmm. they're sort of in this position now. I mean, we've just come off the Fight the Future near kiss, and we've got Diana Fally, and we've got all kinds of other stuff happening during season 6 that is kind of keeping them from yet again from moving forward in that regard. And I like the idea that they, even later in Milagro, I mean, I'm jumping all over the place, that when they say, when he says, or she says, I'm not so lonely, and then she says, loneliness is a choice, you know, it's almost, this is all kind of, feels like it's all somewhat connected to what she would have heard in here and what she would have absorbed about the idea of being so afraid of being lonely that you have to, that you would have to do something like this, kill somebody and die with somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not that they ever considered it, but, you know, they believed it for a moment there, you know? So
No, it's a very interesting theme. And especially with regards to Mulder, the issue of loneliness comes up a lot. But they're certainly, you know, we can certainly see Scully in that same picture as well, because it is a theme throughout the season. And I find it so interesting that Chris Carter chose a Christmas episode to explore the theme of loneliness, which on the surface seems like kind of an odd choice, but makes perfect sense, really, when you kind of, if we are to look at sort of the festive season with without rose-colored glasses on, it can be a very difficult time for people.
Yeah.
And it can be a very lonely time of year. So it kind of makes total sense. We don't see that kind of thing addressed in sort of mass media when it comes to Christmas. Usually every Christmas episode of every show is about how awesome Christmas is. And here's an episode that's not about how awesome Christmas is.
Yeah, it's about how shitty Christmas can be when you don't have all the things that everyone else has. Like, and I mean, I think in the end, by the end, that we realize that they do have that, which I feel like is a little bit of the point of the episode. But I don't quote me on this because I don't know the actual stats, but I do feel like I've heard enough times that it could practically be a cliche that like Christmas is the highest rate of suicide. Like,
yeah, there's something like that. I mean, I know that it's certainly a challenging time of year for everyone, and especially people who have suffered bereavement, especially for people who have mental health challenges. It can be a very difficult time. It's a hard time of year for me. I mean, I've got anxiety, and Christmas is always like, I'm through the roof for the entire month of December, because they're just, you know, there's always these expectations and stress, and it brings back, you know, issues maybe from your past, who knows? So it's just, it's one of the reasons why I like this episode, I think, is because Christmas can be, I find, a challenging time of year for me, mental health wise. And so I don't see that portrayed very often on television. So I relate a lot to sort of this idea of Christmas melancholy being a thing. But that, you know, even if your Christmas and your life and your family doesn't look like necessarily the traditional Christmas or the traditional family, it can still be something positive in your life that can fight the loneliness. And in Mulder and Scully's case, it's each other. And that's all they really need. And so there is a positive message in the end. And so I like that, in the sense that, you know, it doesn't pretend that Christmas is like perfect and that Christmas fixes everything. But at the same time, there's a message of hope at the end, that it is still about connection, but it doesn't necessarily have to be about holding hands around the Christmas tree. So I like that. I really like that message.
You know, you're totally right about that. It's funny. It just occurred to me, on this very show in season 5, during the Emily arc, Christmas Carol. Mm. I think that Detective Kresge actually says, yeah, a lot of people check themselves out around Christmas time. Because
that's right, that's, it does.
Yeah. And so it's funny because it's like they, well, which is ironic because when I watched that episode, it kind of makes me want to check myself out. But joking. But that is funny that it actually, it's brought up like the season before on this very, and I guess that is another sort of Christmassy episode. But like I said,
I think that's the only other Christmassy episode of the X-Files that I could think of was Christmas Carol and Emily. I mean, Christmas Carol and Emily, I think, in my opinion, are the most depressing episodes of the entire series.
I agree.
So clearly in X-Files land, Christmas is not necessarily the most wonderful time of the year.
No. And I mean, look, we look at this one and even with all of the, this one has everything, you know, it has some silly stuff. It has some depressing stuff. It has some scary stuff, but it ends, like you said, on a hopeful note. And I mean, you cannot say the same about that, about those other episodes.
You cannot.
The episodes that will not be named.
Like, this is like a Hallmark Christmas special in comparison with Christmas Carol and Emily. So
exactly.
I, for me, How the Ghost Stole Christmas has just the right tone for a Christmas episode, because it's not got, you know, the sort of phony everything is perfect at Christmas, but at the same time there is like a realistic element of hope to it, so that someone that maybe isn't in a great place can watch this and say, okay, maybe my life's not perfect, because Mulder and Scully's life aren't perfect, they're not perfect people, but they can still find hope. And so I think that's a really, I really like that. I like that vibe. It's one of the reasons why I like this episode, I think.
Yeah, totally. Did you see any sort of parallels? I mean, I know that we get the line that we all enjoy where Mulder says, "We're not lovers," which nobody wants to hear. But did you see any other parallels?
So sad, though, when he says
it. I know, he is kind of sad. He does seem kind of disappointed. He does, right?
He does. Yeah. Like, really disappointed.
It's like, and he gets a little, it's another moment where he gets a little uncomfortable. But parallels between the couples. What is there anything that stood out to you?
I don't know. I mean, certainly I see a parallel in the opening when Mulder's telling the story of Maurice and Lyda in the car to Scully before they go into the house, which is a great story. It's written in a very, the dialogue is very Chris Carter monologue-y style, which normally, you know, I hate, because it's usually very sort of flowery purple prose over the top, but it works perfectly for the story that Mulder is telling.
He's charming her. Yeah.
He's charming her with this sort of, you know, slightly over the top romanticized melodramatic story. And he does tell it. I mean, Scully says right to him, you know, and you told, you know, it's a story that you tell, that you told it well. Mm-hmm. And he does tell it well. It's very sexily delivered. I mean, I was watching it again today, the episode, and I was just sort of closing my eyes and listening during the part when Mulder's telling the story. And I was thinking, in a lot of other, I can imagine a lot of other TV shows feeling the need to put some kind of graphics in while Mulder's telling the story. Like, hey, here's some scenes from World War One to sort of show what he's talking about, kind of thing. Just something visual.
Yeah.
But with the X-Files, we are just watching Mulder tell the story, because David Duchovny does an amazing job of telling that story, actually. And it is really well written, actually, and works really well in that context. And so one of the things that he says while he's telling his enchanting story, he talks about Maurice and Lyda, and about Maurice describes him as a brooding but heroic young man, beloved of Lyda, a sublime beauty with a light that seemed to follow her wherever she went. They were likened to two angels descended from heaven, whom the gods could not protect from the horrors being visited upon this cold, gray earth. And every time I hear that, I think he's talking about Mulder and Scully.
Yeah,
he definitely
is.
I don't know if he's deliberately trying to say that. I kind of feel like maybe he's hitting on Scully slightly. I'm not sure.
I think he's unaware. I think they're both.
I think it's entirely possible he's unaware.
Yeah. I just love the idea. I can just picture Mulder like in his car waiting for Scully like for an hour, just like practicing the story over and over. You know what I mean? Like, all right. I got it.
It sounds very
well rehearsed. I love too how he repeats it was a time of dark despair. Like he's really trying to hit it home. She's like, you said that. But there's a great moment where she's, you know, she's enjoying it. She's just smiling and he stops like he's waiting and she's like, go on. Like, you know, she's like, all right, you've got me. Yeah. It was very cute. And yeah.
And I love that. I must say, I do love that line, you know, two angels descended from heaven whom the gods could not protect from the horrors being visited upon this cold gray earth. Honestly, I feel like that is a pretty good description of Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
Because they so many horrors are visited upon them over the course of the series, and the gods could not protect them, and they were like two angels descended from heaven. So mm-hmm. I really love that bit.
I thought the same thing, for the record.
In terms of like sort of, I guess like young Maurice and young Lyta seem a lot like Mulder and Scully. I don't know if ghost Maurice and Lyta are that much like them, but I think anytime you've got an episode that has two couples in it, we are meant to draw parallels of some kind.
They're a little bit more cynical, I think, in their older age. Even more so than Scully. So it's a I didn't see a lot of those parallels, but I did enjoy the idea that they know them so well, because it's like, you know, you see a little bit of yourselves probably in everybody. You look for the things that you see in yourself. And I mean, and Maurice even says himself, he's like you said, we've been doing this for years, you know, like everyone that comes here is coming here for a reason. They're obviously here for a reason. You know, why'd you come here? And it's true. Why else would you do that? You know what I mean? Like, why else would you come here on Christmas Eve? It's because you're lonely. Like,
well, exactly. And I mean, Maurice and Lyta, a big part of their whole modus operandi is to convince Mulder and Scully that they are like Maurice and Lyta, and so that they are
so that they'll kill themselves.
So I definitely can see that as part of, you know, the trap that they lay for Mulder and Scully.
Right. Well, let's talk about that, because it seems like they, you know, obviously their goal is to get them to kill each other, murder, suicide somehow. I do love the part when Mulder is like, she's not going to shoot me. Well, maybe she'll shoot herself. I wouldn't let her. Like, it was just,
I love that bit.
It's very sweet. And I don't even know if like he realizes how sweet that is. Like, because
he's just like, it's so sort of quiet, but so sort of rock solid determined.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd love that line, actually.
It's really nice. And he says it so automatically. It's just, it's almost silly. Like, of course that's not going to happen. And it does make you wonder, like, they obviously didn't go there to kill themselves. And then you think about, okay, all the other people that went, I guess somebody dies every year or whatever the story is. I don't know how real it is or if it's just a story. But which is actually an interesting point, because if people did die in the house, they did, right? Like,
I think that at one point, Lyta maybe says, is it Lyta? No, Mulder at one point says that there have been something like 4 double murders or murder suicides over the period of time.
So it's not every year.
It's not every year, but they try it every year, I think.
Right. Well,
not always successful.
And they did say that no one even showed up last year. Didn't they say
that's
that?
That's true.
So it's possible that, like, you know, business has slowed. You know, they don't want to get take off the tourist literature. Yeah. But it makes me wonder, though, that the other 4 couples or whatever that showed up, did they show up for that purpose?
Well, yes, that does raise interesting questions. What's the difference between them and Mulder and Scully? Did they show up with that intention, which maybe they did, or maybe their relationship wasn't quite as strong in terms of the trust and faith they have in each other?
Right.
As Mulder and Scully did. Because, I mean, Mulder and Scully, when it came down to it, they did not believe that the other would shoot them.
Right.
Even when presented with lots of evidence that they would. I mean, right up until the moment that they are shot, quote unquote, they think it's not going to happen. You know, Scully says to Mulder, no, I don't believe a word you're saying. She does not believe he's going to shoot her. And it's only when, you know, they create the illusion of having been shot that they start to think, wait, I think I've actually been shot. You actually shot me. But up until that moment, they don't believe, there's no way that they believe that that would happen.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is when you think about it, the fact that they are able to break free from that is remarkable, especially like considering it even just from Scully's perspective. She sees it all. She sees it happen. She sees Mulder approaching her. She sees him shooting her. She feels herself being shot, right? Like, she feels the blood, sees the blood. There could not be any more evidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
yet,
it's all 100%.
Yeah, and yet based 100% on him saying your favorite line, get up, you're not shot, suddenly they're both snapped out of it. It's
like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
It is based on the kind of trust and faith they have in each other, I think, that at the end of the day, they don't believe that either of them would do this, despite all evidence to the contrary.
Exactly.
And it's interesting that Mulder's the one who kind of snaps out of it first, because he, I think, is less likely to just to sort of take things as they appear, that he's more likely to sort of look for alternative explanations. And he quite quickly figures it out. I think, you know, Scully
says
something.
I think that's probably why, right?
Yes. Scully says something like, no, you shot me. And he's like, no, I didn't. Okay. I know exactly what's going on here. It took him no time at all to figure it out. And it's one of my favorite lines when Mulder says, get up, you're not shot. It's like my personal mantra when I need to snap myself out of anxiety, which I've talked about before. And the reason why it's so powerful to me is this idea that you can believe something, and this is the root of certainly of anxiety and a lot of mental illnesses. When you have the illness, things seem 100% true to you that are not in fact true, but it's nearly impossible to convince yourself otherwise. But all it takes is to convince yourself of that for just 1 second. If you can snap out of that, you can overcome amazing things. It can feel like you've been shot and that you're dragging yourself across the floor in a pool of your own blood. And even that you can overcome by just remembering, hey, get up, you're not shot. Just tell yourself that. If you believe that, if you can believe that this is not real, then you can overcome things that seem like they cannot be overcome and things that seem like they are real. And the way Mulder does that is just amazing to me, that he's just like, oh, you know, I haven't been shot. He just stands right up. He goes from seeming as though he's going to die, and he can just stand right up just like that. And Scully can do the same thing. He has to convince her, get up, you're not shot. She's like, yeah, I have been actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just takes a couple of seconds. Get up, you're not shot. And she's like, holy crap, I'm not. And she just stands right up.
And she believes all of a sudden, him.
She believes him. She has faith in him. And it can feel like you're dying 1 minute. And if you can just have faith that in the idea you're not shot, that can completely change your perception, change your behavior, change your perception of reality. And so I love that part of the episode, because the episode is a lot about fear, a lot about being afraid. They talk about a lot about, are you scared? I'm not afraid. Yes, I'm afraid. It's not a rational fear. There's that kind of dialogue. And so it's very powerfully done, I think. And it's really interestingly done. And so I love that part of the episode. It's just, I love the fact that, I mean, the first time I watched it obviously was at Christmas time, because that's when it aired. And I just remember, because Christmas is my anxiety season, I so needed that message. Get up, you're not shot. Because I thought I had some kind of weird disease or something at the time. And I was like, ah, no, there's something wrong with me. And I just told myself, get up, you're not shot. And it's amazing. It was like, you know, a life preserver for me. So it's something I need to hear every Christmas. So this was a good time for me to watch this episode again, because I always need that message. It's a great message. And it's really says so many interesting things about the faith and trust between Mulder and Scully, which I love about their relationship as well. So it's very cool. It's very, very well done. I love it.
Yeah, that's actually like really, that's a really powerful message. And it's interesting too, that like you said earlier, most people want to pull out like the happy Christmas movies and that cheers them up. And it's funny that this is what works for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's great.
The happy Christmas movies are like fingernails on a chalkboard to me, but
that not surprise me, Jen?
Right, I know. This one speaks to me, so it meets me where I'm at. You know, I'm not necessarily happy at Christmas, so it meets me where I'm at, and it takes me to a hopeful place, which is perfect for me.
Well, let's break this down here, because I just want to make sure that you're on the same page as me in terms of what exactly happened. So I mean, I know there's going to be some guesswork happening here, but I assume that the Mulder that walks in and he's being all over the top dramatic, like more loneliness than 364 shopping days, more loneliness.
I think Light overplayed that.
Yes. Yes. And it's funny because the first time you're watching it, like I think that Eric, I think my husband was like totally buying it and he was confused. Yeah. He's like, what do you shoot her? Like he was just like totally getting it. And I'm like, well, you'll find out what's going on. Yeah. And it cuts. I think it actually cuts to a commercial before you really know what's going on in terms of that. OK, that's just Lyta playing Mulder, play acting Mulder. But it does seem like at a certain point she shoots Mulder. And then she tries to, or sorry, she shoots Scully and then tries to like shoot herself. And as they're like, he stops her because, and I'm wondering why he's like, no, is this kind of like, cause hey, you're cheating. You know, you got to get her to do it. Like, is it, I was wondering what you thought of that moment.
I'm kind of curious about that moment too, about, because, you know, Lyta's holding the gun to her head and, you know, pretending to be Mulder, but you know, Maurice intervenes. The only thing I could think of was that there's some kind of a ghost rule that, you know, don't shoot yourself again. You've already got one hole. You'll put a hole in your head and it'll stay there forever. That was the only thing I could think of, is that maybe the ghosts can still be damaged by guns and they don't want to actually shoot themselves. That's all I could think of.
Yeah. It was just weird to me why she did that, unless he was just, yeah, I don't know. That part kind of didn't make sense to me much at all. But like,
I don't know either. I guess, or I suppose there needed to be a plausible explanation for Mulder still being alive later on, because in their scheme, Scully needs to shoot Mulder. And for that to happen, Mulder has to still be alive. And so the Mulder that Scully watches can't shoot himself, because if he shoots himself,
then she
and
can't
then
do it. Yeah.
Mulder walks in, the jig's going to be up right then and there. So there has to be a way to get fake Mulder out of Scully's sight.
Right.
So that Mulder can come in and finish the scene, I guess.
So I assume, though, that while Scully's down there, you know, drowning in her blood, Mulder is just up, you know, bumbling around in another room looking for a door, right? Like he's elsewhere completely.
He's elsewhere, yeah.
And then and he comes then across Scully on the ground, which is Lyta again. Yeah. Goes up to her, and I love the difference too in David's acting when he sees Scully, and you know this is the real Mulder now, and his reaction to that is just like, he's so concerned. It's so cute. I mean, of course he's concerned, but he doesn't believe it. He's just like, what? Like, he doesn't know what happened. He thinks maybe she shot herself, probably, because like how else would she be shot? You know,
and then where did the gun come from? Yeah,
yeah. And then he, Lyta then shoots Mulder.
Yeah, and he doesn't really believe. Like, Lyta is like holding up a gun about to shoot him, and he still doesn't believe that this is going to happen. He says something like, what are you doing?
Right.
And saying, don't shoot me.
Right.
Which you'd think he kind of might say something like
or
that.
Try and take the gun or something.
Or try and take the gun or something. But because it's Scully to him, he's like, what are you doing pointing that gun at me? He doesn't believe it's going to happen.
Those faces that they make after they're shot are so telling, like, especially Scully's, but just the face of just like, what, that really happened? Wow. Like, it's something I never believed it that actually happened. Yeah. But it's then I assume, and I love this. I actually thought it was a really, really funny moment when Mulder falls and you see Lily Tomlin laying on the ground and she's just like, like, she's so happy. Yeah.
They're having so much fun.
They
at this
are.
Point. I think this is Lyta and Maurice are having the most fun because they're getting like this is the outcome they were going for, which is, you know, we're getting to the best part. This is the part they have the most fun with. And so like, oh, everything's just working out perfectly.
So
they're having, I think Lyta's a bit of a ham. She loves,
loves
this whole play acting thing.
So technical question. There are actually no real guns being fired at all, I'm assuming.
Well, I guess you're right. There can't be.
Nobody got actually shot. So
no one actually, because the only shots that are being fired are from Lyda in both cases, actually. The Lyda has a pretend ghost gun.
Yes.
And because she's the one that shoots Scully, quote unquote, and she's the one that shoots Mulder, quote unquote. So yeah, in both cases, you're right. Those are not real guns. So no one's actually, there are no real bullets and no one's actually shot.
Right. I was thinking about the technicality of that, because they do make a point at a certain time that they show her drop the gun into Mulder's hand. She pulls his gun out of his holster and she's somehow holding it and then drops it and he catches it, which is a really cool effect, by the way. I really liked that scene.
Yeah. Love that bit.
But I wondered too if they threw that in just to kind of like tell us or prep us for the idea that these ghosts can handle the real guns. Maybe that's just for the audience benefit, so that we think that everyone's really shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly would plant the idea in our head that
they can. They can do that. Yeah.
Lyda might have actually had Mulder's real gun, even though it would turn out she didn't. But yeah, it gives us the idea that she might well have. Because as far as the audience is concerned, right up until Mulder stands up,
everybody's shot. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think there's
the ghosts, but still shot.
There's the part of you that thinks, oh, well, you know, there's no way that they're shot because it's the middle of season six and they don't die. But you know what I mean? Like, we're wondering, how are they going to get out of this? It's very much like Dreamland. Like, you're 10 minutes from the end and you're like, well, how the fuck are they going to get out of this one? Like, that's just great storytelling, too, because you're just like, okay, please, please explain this. Tell me how they're going to get out of this, you know? You're absolutely right. I think that's
they're not pulling any punches. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Self a Merry Little Christmas is playing. It's super creepy. And I mean, that's a great scene.
Yeah, it is.
And then we have the real Mulder and the real Scully together, both shot. That's the first time that they actually see each other having been shot, quote unquote. It's a question now of what's going to happen. Like, are they going to figure it out? Are they going to shoot each other now? Because there is a bit of an implication, I think, that they still are, they're on their guard against each other and may in fact actually shoot each other, which I suppose
it's like a standoff almost.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's what Maurice and Lyda wanted to happen, I suppose, because at some point someone needs to shoot each other with a real gun.
That's true. That's a really good point. Like, that was the moment where they say we almost had him. That was the moment where it could have happened. So they do need to point their guns at each other at a certain point.
Their guns at each other at one point, and it's pretty convincing. It's pretty tense stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just at the very last second that they kind of lose the will to shoot each other anyway.
Well, I think they're tired. Scully seems very tired. And I mean, Mulder's the one who's literally fallen down the stairs. I mean, we don't really know where Scully's come from. She seems to have a little bit of a head start. You can like see her kind of crawling towards the door. So I assume that maybe she was on the ground floor and Mulder sort of was above her or something.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely far apart from each other, I guess.
Yeah, but I love some of this
dialogue. Scully's in rough shape.
Yeah, I love some of this dialogue at the end too that they have, because there's a moment where I think Scully says, I'm not going to make it, or something like that. And he goes, no, you're not without me, you're not. Or he says something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a great line. It's a great little moment I like a lot.
Yeah, what do you think he meant by that? I always find that kind of a curious line. Does that mean like you're not dying without me shooting you first? Because that's the moment when he pointed the gun at her, which kind of always confused me a little bit about exactly what he meant there.
I think that there's, again, multi layers of meaning to that. But I just like the idea that it's like, regardless of what happens in this moment, it's the two of them. They're in it together. If they do die together, that's what's happening. You know what I mean? Right. And I don't think in that moment he's saying, I know I'm going to kill you. I don't think that's what he's saying.
Right.
I think he's just saying, look, you're in this with me. Whatever happens is happening together. And I think that's kind of the main reason for that.
Yeah. I like that interpretation better.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny because it never occurred to me that that's what he could have meant. And I don't think that, like you said, even though they're pointing the guns at each other, I don't think that's ever really a question that's going to happen. I feel like that's just like a typical reaction, almost as like a cop, like as an FBI agent type thing. Like, okay, I don't know what just happened. All I know is that you shot me. And so I'm defending myself, you know, but I don't think it ever actually crosses either of their minds to pull the trigger. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that that's really ever going to happen. So in in a weird way, I feel like Maurice and Lyta's plan was kind of doomed from the start. Like, I don't think it would have happened. But luckily, you know, Mulder gets to, you know, break free of it. So,
yeah, because, I mean, Maurice and Lyta, I think their plan was extremely well executed.
Yeah.
We can't fault them on any level, you know. The psychoanalysis, the planting the seeds, everything was done. I mean, and then the whole scenario of who shoots who and people are getting shot, they pulled it off perfectly. Their plan is flawless. The only reason it doesn't succeed is because Mulder and Scully are who they are and because of the relationship they have.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
It's very heartwarming. It's a super heartwarming, murdery scene. Yeah. It's very romantic.
It really is. It's weirdly romantic. And then when they kind of get up and they run out, and then we see that there is no blood, there's nothing. And
it's a very cool sort of moment, isn't it?
David makes a really kind of cute face, like, oh, holy shit, let's get out of here, you know, and like pushes her. Like, again, probably touching her back and guiding her away.
Yes, of course. Can I, one thing occurred to me today, completely aside, when Scully gets shot, she kind of looks like she's wearing the same outfit that she has on in Milagro when she's like covered with blood at the end. And I'm thinking that's like Scully's super unlucky outfit, that she always seems to be covered in blood when she has that particular blouse, jacket.
You're right.
Combination. It just looks really similar to me. It's evocative.
You're right.
She just always seems to wind up covered in blood when she's wearing that.
To be fair, I feel like that's a pretty common outfit for her to be wearing. Yeah. I feel like she was also wearing that in Fight the Future.
Yeah,
so she also got kidnapped and stung by bees and cock-blocked in that outfit.
It's a great outfit. And she might be wearing something similar when she gets shot in Tithonus, too, actually. Mm-hmm. And she just seems to... She gets covered in blood a lot, poor lamb. So
poor Scully.
I've noticed that. Yeah.
She went through a lot of shit in this season.
She did. that reminds me also that I love that bit... As a complete aside again, where Mulder and Scully find the bodies under the floor and they're wearing the same clothes. And that's how they find out that it's them. It's funny the way the scene unfolds, because at first Scully's like, she's got my outfit. And what does Mulder say?
He says, oh, how embarrassing.
Which is hilarious.
That's such a Mulder line. I love it.
It's such a Mulder line. And then Scully says, yeah, well, you know what? He's wearing yours. And that's when they're super freaked out at that moment. And I love that moment, actually, because up until that point, it's a fairly lighthearted episode. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, everything just turns around and it gets super scary, spooky, because that's pretty grisly, actually, that scene.
I love
that scene.
That's funny, too, because I always, I not to go too far into this, but I always wonder what the deal was with that, too. Like, was the idea just to freak them out? Like, to those,
I think so.
Because they also, you know, Maurice and Lyta obviously have the ability to project whatever they want, probably in whatever way. I mean, who knows how ghosts work? Like we said, they have all their own little rules. But like they obviously know what they're wearing because they see them. So they're able to just sort of like pick the outfits that they happen to be wearing. It almost would have been freakier if it had been like randomly like David's gray shirt or like Scully's like a different outfit, and they'd be like wait a minute, that's my shirt but that's the one I wore yesterday, what the fuck.
That would be extra creepy,
right? Like how would they know their clothes? They obviously know them because that's what they're wearing right now anyway.
But it sort of creates this sense of inevitability.
Yeah.
Like this has already happened on a certain level.
Yeah.
It cannot be resisted.
Right, right. Anyway, I get on a practical level why they did it. Yeah. But I was just almost thinking that in retrospect, would that be freakier if they actually somehow knew their real clothes? I don't know.
It was cool. I thought it was really cool. And plus, you know, Mulder wearing leather jackets.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite looks. So
he liked that leather jacket a lot in this season.
Mm. Yeah, and I love it every time, because a lot of the times they're doing cases outside of the FBI, like in this case, because they're not assigned to the X-Files in season 6, and so we get some opportunities for non-FBI clothes. Mm-hmm. Although it's hard,
not
Scully.
For Scully. I mean, Jesus, put on some jeans, Scully.
This is what she went when she's Christmas shopping, apparently.
I remember this. Yeah, God, I remember this was one of my huge pet peeves about the show. I feel like Scully's clothes was such a big pet, on my pet peeve list. I was just annoyed why they never dress her in anything casual, ever.
Exactly. Yeah, because, I mean, Mulder's very casual in this episode. Why can't she be a little more casual? Come on.
I mean, it doesn't even need to, like, affect her character. Like, we've seen her wearing casual clothes at home on occasion. Yeah, yes. So it's like...
We'll still know it's Scully. It's fine.
Exactly. I don't know. It just drives me nuts when she's wearing, like, her work clothes, like, all the time. Like, come on. Give her a freaking sweatpants.
Yeah, no, exactly. That would have been nice. That would have been a treat.
Yeah.
They were dressed really similarly because they're both wearing sort of white tops with something black over it.
Right,
so.
Right. Anyway, random tangent, but I always have to bring that up because
these are the things that trouble me most in the world are the random tangent things.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move into the final scene of cuteness. What do you say?
Oh, God, yes, let's. I love the scene of cuteness.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't? It's so cute. I mean, we know that our codependent Scully has to come to Mulder in the middle of the night. It's cute because it is kind of a backwards thing. Like, usually he's the one calling her in the middle of the night, like, waking her up for random, random bullshit. But, like, for this, he didn't. Like,
That's true. She comes to him. And you could tell probably he would have liked to have called her, but he knows he's already kind of imposed upon her enough.
Yeah, it's like that self-awareness you were talking about. It's like, on this night, the roles are very, very much in tune with what they've been told. Like, they're both sort of, I don't want to say feeding into it or giving into it, but they're both sort of like absorbing that and realizing that, you know, it's true. Part of it is true. And even their behavior and the way they approach each other is borne out through that. I just find that really interesting.
Yeah. No, I think that's very, very cool as well. And it's very compelling. I love the bit when Scully shows up at the door. First, Mulder can't believe she's there because he thinks it's his neighbor knocking on his ceiling or something, because he looks up.
Oh, no, he thinks it's ghosts.
Ghosts, yeah. You think? Yeah.
Totally. Well. That was
he's
always.
So at that point.
Yeah, that was always how I read that, is that he's like, oh, shit, are there ghosts?
Oh. That was, I never thought of that.
Yeah, that's funny. That's what I thought.
He's watching A Christmas Carol, I think, mm-hmm. which, of course, is a Christmas story with ghosts in it, which is cool.
Yeah.
So I love it when Scully shows up and she just doesn't quite know how to articulate exactly what she's there for and eventually just says, can I come in? And it's just kind of like, it's just a very sweet little moment between them. And Scully doesn't ask for that kind of thing very often. And so it was just kind of very sweet.
Yeah,
I just love it. I love the whole vibe between them, and you know they're being a little more self-aware, and that moment when you know Scully says, you know, maybe I did want to be out there with you, and it's just very sweet. It's just one of those wonderful Scully Mulder look moments. They just share a lovely look.
It's rare, sort of. Naked honesty. We don't see that very often with the two of them, that they actually talk about how they're feeling and they're honest about it.
And they're trying to do the right thing and trying to say the right thing.
Yeah, and they're even kind of like, she says, she's asking him, is that really what happened? Like, was that all just in our heads? It's like, she's not coming at him like she normally would, saying, oh, Mulder, you're full of shit. You know, she's not doing that. You know, she's...
That's right.
They're reacting to each other a little bit differently. Like he's smarmy like Mulder, and he's like, well, what, you didn't want to be out there? And then he kind of goes, oh, wait, that's narcissistic of me. Like he's catching himself. She probably has no idea what he's talking about. But likewise, it's like she does the same thing, whereas typically she might just kind of roll her eyes. She tells him the truth. You know, she says, you know, maybe I just did want to be out there. And then it goes back to the beginning with her coming out of the car and being like, I'm not going to do it. It's my New Year's resolution. I'm not going to do it. Which is another very funny moment. But like, it makes me wonder, like, what actually compels her? Mm-hmm. I mean, as always, as every week, to follow him. And it goes just to that question, is maybe it's as simple as you just wanted to be there. And I love that about it. I wanted to bring up to you, because we went past it, in the moment in the Christmas Carol that they were showing was the moment at the end where Scrooge, you know, figures out the true meaning of Christmas. Yeah.
And he's so happy.
Yeah. He says, I think the line is actually, I don't deserve to be this happy.
And that's when they cut to Mulder, I think.
That's when they cut to Mulder. And I think that's just, it's very, very pointed, you know, and obviously very intentional. And it's just one of those things that I'm constantly, it's a constant push-pull with Mulder and Scully, how rarely they're allowed these moments of levity or happiness. It's almost like the show people don't think they deserve to be happy, you know? and I know a lot of people think that. I know that's not the case because, again, this is what the show is about. But it's just one of those...
Television.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that kind of, you cut to that shot of Mulder and he's just thinking so hard and you're like, no, you guys, you do deserve to be happy. Have your little moment. And they get to, you know what I mean? It's very sweet.
Yeah. Because I think Mulder does, it is quite likely that Mulder doesn't believe he deserves to be happy. I think that could easily be part of his psyche because of a lot of shit that he's been through.
Absolutely.
Then to kind of, you know, he's proven wrong just a few minutes later when Scully shows up and happy Christmas gift exchange.
Yeah, it's so cute.
And they are truly happy.
They're very happy. We get to see that rare little Scully smile that we don't really ever get to see. And I kind of forgot that we got to see that in this episode. I really did because it is rare. I mean, we get to see her smile occasionally, but that particular smile is very rare. And it is one of those moments where they both are genuinely happy. And I love the idea. Yeah. I love the idea that we don't see what is in the presents. It's definitely one of those things that it always baffles me because the same people that probably love the ending of this and how we kind of pan out and give them their moment are the same people that hate the church whisper.
Yeah.
And it's the same exact thing. It's, you know what? This is not just this is another X-File, but this is them having their moment. And you know what? We don't get to see it. We're not going to get to see it because it's for them. And I think that's kind of cute and I like it. Especially here. I thought about that a lot when, you know, during Nothing Lasts Forever and we did the whisper. And I mean, it's never, ever going to stop being a question. Just like these Christmas gifts. It's like it's never going to stop being talked about what were in those in those Christmas presents. Yeah. And I mean, that's brilliant. It's beautiful.
That's exactly what they're trying to create. I mean, you know, Frank Spotnitz, our new friend, mentioned that when we were talking to him that, you know, they love the idea that people are still talking about this stuff years later. That's exactly what they wanted to create. And boy, howdy did they.
They lead it to a question is what he said. It's like you use all these different methods not to necessarily get an explanation or an answer, but to lead to another question. And they do. It's so good.
It's very cool. And it's always, you know, we get just enough answers so that we're not constantly frustrated.
Right.
You know, it's frustrating in kind of a fun way, but not frustrating in kind of a, I just give up and I'm out. Because I've done that with TV shows where it's kind of like, you're giving me nothing. I'm completely confused.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going. I don't understand any of this. You're not giving me any answers. And it's like, sorry, no, you're done. But, you know, the X-Files just kept me coming back. They just always managed to have that balance of just giving me enough to keep me going. And they do a brilliant job. And this is a great example of it. You know, this isn't about an alien. It's about a Christmas present, but it's the same principle, which is show just enough. And the way they sort of pull back through the window of Mulder's apartment is very much like, you know, we're leaving them now, which I think is kind of a little similar to the end of Existence at the end of season 8.
Yeah.
The very last shot with Mulder and Scully together. The camera sort of pans out through the bedroom door, essentially, to kind of like, we're leaving them now. So it's kind of a similar kind of vibe, which is kind of nice because, like, they deserve that. They deserve to have happiness and peace.
Well, I mean, absolutely. And on the flip side of that, you can take an episode like Never Again, and it ends the same way, but just in a different vibe, with a different tone. You know, we're panning away from the two of them sitting with that desk between them, and we're leaving them. And we're leaving them now. We don't know how that resolves. We don't know how that happens. And I feel like that is just the name of the game here. And this is just one of those particularly very well illustrated moments. So I got to ask you, Jen, do you have any theories about what's in those presents?
About the gifts?
Yeah.
I mean, they've made them quite interesting shapes, haven't they? They didn't just go with standard boxes.
Well, I think it's pretty clear Mulder has a video.
I think a video is a very good guess.
From the way he shakes it, too, and the size.
It kind of seems like a video to me. I mean, if I had to guess, it's something kind of jokey, probably, like something paranormal. I mean, you can get so many crazy paranormal videos, especially in the 90s. So it could be something like that. I want to imagine it's something like, you know, Sex Secrets of the Sasquatch or something like that. Just something really like something that somehow that sort of plays into his love of porn and his love of the paranormal.
I agree with you together. Completely, because that was in my headcanon was that she got him some sort of like alien anal probe porno video. Yeah, exactly. Just as a joke, because I just think that I could totally see that actually happening. Because they've been so comfortable joking about the porn for six years that I just think that would be hilarious.
I think that's exactly probably what it is. Now, of course, Scully's is an interesting shape.
Yeah.
It's cylindrical. And I'm going to pick something less commonly suggested. And I'm going to say it's like some kind of goofy kid's toy of some kind, like a kaleidoscope or something.
Yeah. I feel like.
Something with a hint of whimsy.
Yeah, I feel like I read that in like a fic or something that it was that a kaleidoscope is very cute and very sweet.
Yeah.
I've read a bunch of different things. I mean, we got to give Jillian a shout out at one of the panels. It was so brilliant. They were talking about that. They asked them, David and Jillian, what they thought was in the presents. Yeah. And she goes, what season was that? And they were like, six. And she's like, well, I know what I needed. And they were laughing, and I think David was like, well, it was cylindrical shape. And she goes, oh, well, there you go.
Exactly.
It was so funny.
Well established.
It makes me wonder, like, they don't plan that shit. I mean, these are audience questions, right? It was so funny. It was just such a very well played moment. I always remember it.
So what's your guess for Scully?
Well, I just told you. No,
yeah,
I honestly don't know.
You subscribe to that theory.
I actually don't think I really subscribe to that theory, because I just think I think with everything going on in season six, I think there's too much tension.
Yeah,
too much underlying tension for that to be the gift. Yeah. I think that he might have given that to her even like in season five probably in season seven. I feel like that would have happened even. Yeah. But I don't think in season six. I don't know. I think it's funny.
Too close to the bone, maybe. No pun intended.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I actually, once I kind of chucked that idea, I went back to the drawing board, and I really don't know. But I like the idea of like a kaleidoscope or something like that. I think that's
kind of something kind of fun.
Yeah.
Something for Scully to have a little bit of fun in her life. Something kind of fun and whimsical. So that's as much as I've been able to figure out. I no doubt Chris Carter has no clue what those gifts were necessarily supposed to be, but he was like, just put them in weird, interesting shapes so that it'll give the fans something to talk about.
Well, here's the thing. I'm 100% convinced that that's an actual videotape. So I'm curious what, even though it's not the videotape, I'm curious what videotape they wrapped. Like, you know what I mean? Because it had to be something.
Yeah. Do they just have like
a blank one or something?
Videotapes around? Yeah. I mean, my house had like blank videotapes on every horizontal surface. So
right.
I don't know if TV studios are like that.
They are. I mean, around that time, they probably are. I'm sure they were able to find something, which is really cute. I mean, that was some poor PA. They're like, oh, shit, we got to get those gifts wrapped. Go find a video. Wrap that right now. But I wonder, too, about like Scully's could literally be like a paper towel roll.
What I'm thinking it is. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I was like, well, something was wrapped.
I feel like whatever the gifts were, they were freaking adorable.
Yeah, I love it. Well, before we head out, which do you have? Do you have anything else that we didn't get to talk about? Any highlights or scenes that stood out for you?
No, I think we talked about all of them, which was great because I mean, I love all of the scenes of this episode. They work really well together. I've watched it a lot. Like, it's right up there. I mean, it's my number 15 on my top 25 in terms of how much I love it. But in terms of the number of times I've watched it, it probably makes it the top 10 at least, because it's just the kind of episode I can just watch over and over again. And there's nothing about it that I don't like, really. So I'm glad we had a chance to break it down and talk about all my favorite things about it.
Yeah, I think we talked about pretty much everything. The only thing I wanted to mention that was just so random and would never, ever come up in any other episode ever was the part where Mulder is like up on the landing and Lyta's there and he's like kind of looking for an exit and he kind of picks her up and like moves her aside and she goes, "Masher." And I think that's like so funny and random. And it's also another one of those throwaway lines that are like we talked about like last week or the last episode when Sheila's yelling, "Not his face, don't punch him in the face." It's one of those things that you might not catch every time, but like every time I see it, I look for it because I just find the way she delivers that line so funny. She's like, "Masher."
She's just so good.
She's delightful.
Every line she delivers is gold for me.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, is that all you really had to say, or do you have anything?
That's it. I love How the Ghost Stole Christmas, and everyone should definitely watch it at Christmas time, because there's a lot of very valuable stuff you can take from it at any time of year. I rarely watch it at Christmas. This is probably the first time I've actually watched it at Christmas since it originally aired, just because I watch it, you know, randomly throughout the year.
Yeah, same.
So it was kind of fun to watch it at Christmas time. So I highly recommend everyone, when you're finished listening, go put it on. It'll make you feel many different things, which the X-Files always does.
It was nice to watch it with, like, the Christmas tree in the background. Yeah, that was very, very, very unique. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening. And please tweet at us. Let us know what you think of this episode. I know pretty much everyone, I think, loves this episode universally. But we'd like to hear from you guys at XFD Podcast. Tweet at us. Let us know what you think. And, you know, whatever you happen to celebrate, hope you guys have a happy holiday this year, and we'll be back with you after the new year.
Bye!
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let yourself be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Here we are, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Until then we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore.
Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us. The years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas. Now